Well, welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is our time for sports in the news. We're going to begin a conversation with both Scott and Aaron, former and current producer of this program. The World Cup is certainly in the news. I know that neither of you guys are huge soccer fanatics, but boy, I tell you what, I saw the last 5 minutes of the Mexican game against the Netherlands, where the Netherlands player tried to keep a ball from going out of bounds, and had an off balance kick, started falling down. His feet got tangled around the ball with a Mexican player, and if anything, it was the Netherlands player who got his feet tangled up against the Mexican player, but they called the yellow card against the Mexican player, and the game, which was tied 1-1 in extra time, ended with the Netherlands winning on a kick because of a flop and a bad officiating call. What's your guys' opinion of World Cup, of flopping and of the officiating in the game?
Well, I think it's the stereotype that runs with soccer to begin with. They're the originators of the flop. It's also yes. One of the reasons why when NBA players are starting to do it, that they get such a such a harsh view when they do it.
They're called soccer players when they do it. It was a soccer move. Ubiquitous within soccer. In fact, this Netherlands player who really tripped himself, he would have fallen down if there wasn't anybody within 20 feet of him. And if anything, he was the one who got his feet tangled with the Mexican player. I mean, he went down like a three-legged Goonie bird. I mean, he had arms and feet flying everywhere, and then looking at the ref of, oh, my God, look what happened to me, as if he had been wounded.
Well, yeah, that's part of soccer. I mean, that's something that they've allowed to go on for forever. Two World Cups ago, when it was Italy and I forget who, when the one guy headbutted the one guy, and the one guy acted like the guy headbutted him so hard in the chest that it was France versus Italy, Zidane. And the guy acted like if Zidane could actually headbutt somebody that hard.
Yes.
Like, he is the greatest headbutter in the history of headbutters because the Italian guy flew like 5 feet.
No, I know. It's embarrassing. The game strikes me similar to wrestling. You know, where, you know, the people are thrown, it's all choreographed, and they're thrown, and they pretend like, you know, they've had this massive blow done to them, and they were actually the one that propelled themselves, you know, out of the ring. It's hard to imagine that game is taken seriously. The other thing that was so interesting, and we'll move away from the Mexican game, is the only thing that I liked about it is that there were two Mexican players on the side, and they had down on their knees, and they had their hands in the perfect little Catholic choir boy place together, eyes closed, and they were praying that the Netherlands player would miss the kick. So, you know, what you never hear is when the prayer is answered, I'll put that in quote, you always say, I want to thank God, I want to thank my Lord Jesus Christ for helping me score that goal. But when it doesn't happen, you have the two guys on television praying. Was God rooting for the other team? Did he not watch the match? Was he busy doing other stuff at the moment? You never hear that.
He likes the Netherlands better.
Okay, there you go. You know, the other thing about soccer that it irritates me no end is that they haven't learned yet that there's this thing called a stopwatch, and that the clock doesn't have to run continually, that you can stop the timer when the ball goes out of bounds or somebody scores a goal. You don't have to have arbitrary extra time. You never know when the game's going to be over. And even in extra time, it's not necessarily when the extra time ends. It's who has possession, and when the referee says or umpire says, I think the game is going to be over now.
You know, I actually like their stoppage time. It's actually one of the things that appeals that appeals to me.
Oh,
about
come on.
Yes? I actually like it.
Really?
It adds a sense of... It adds something else to the game for me.
A sense of wonderment, like I just love arbitrary decisions, so I really don't know when the game's going to be over.
Well, there's arbitrary decisions anytime you have a ref. Every call by a ref is an arbitrary decision. It's that looked like pass interference.
In American sports, the stopwatch is they're arguing over tenths of a second as to when the ball went out of bounds or when the play was over, so they know whether or not another play can be run. And in soccer, whatever we think. Yeah, maybe we'll run it for another 7 or 8 minutes. Maybe another 3 or 4. Whatever suits us.
Yeah, but I guess I've never had a problem with the stoppage time portion of it.
Aaron, are you more rational than your friend Scott?
I don't think that makes him irrational. I just don't care for it at all, really.
It's not there.
All right. I think if you want to play the game.
I've never cared. Well, see, I don't care about soccer enough to actually have an opinion. I don't care enough about soccer to have an opinion on their rules.
Okay. What I'm basically hearing from you is that you don't watch it enough, and since they have such an unusual way of managing their time and how long a game's going to last, you find it cute. You probably wouldn't use the word cute, but it's uniquely soccer.
I don't care enough about soccer to learn their rules or to something as, like, for me, when it comes to soccer, I have so many other issues with soccer that when it comes to that extra time where the refs decides, oh, we're going to tack on a minute.
That's not high on your priorities.
Not high on my priorities.
I kind of like a game to be structured where the rules make sense. I just don't like arbitrary, and it's why I don't watch regular season basketball. The umpires, the refs, dominate the game. And they dominate the game to such an extent it's unwatchable for me. In soccer, I kind of sense the same thing. Even the length of the game is under the subjective purview of the umpires. What do you think about the patriotism associated with this? I mean, how even now Americans are acting like that their soccer team is a... is part of America. You know, it's that we are playing for national pride.
Yeah, but then a week from now, nobody's going to care, and they're just going to say, oh, it's soccer. We never really cared to begin with.
Every four years, soccer becomes the biggest thing in America, in American sports. And they, oh, this is great, this is great. And you want to know how much we actually care about it? Think to the other day when LeBron James opted out of his contract.
Yes.
What was it? Nobody cared about the World Cup. Nobody cared about the World Cup at that point. It was like, oh my God, LeBron James is a free agent, you know? And that dominated SportsCenter, that dominated in all this. This all ties into everything the government really wants is for people to tie their country to sports.
Yeah.
Think of how irrational, Vikings fans are against Packer fans and things like that.
I guess it's a way that people who really don't know who's playing can wrap themselves around and be a fan of a team because that team is representing their patriotic endeavor.
Yep, and it's no different than the Olympics. Same thing happens when the Olympics come around. People get super crazy about
won the most medals.
Who won the most medals? And there's people that don't care about basketball at all until the U.S. men's basketball team loses in the Olympics. And then all of a sudden it's that's a horrible way to represent your country. It's like, what?
And I don't see them ever representing the country. They're representing themselves.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. They're representing themselves. If you tie who you are to something somebody else is doing, what does that say about you?
Speaking of individuals and representing themselves, you mentioned LeBron James opting out of his contract, so do the rest of the Heat players. What do you all think about not only free agency, but salary caps and dominant teams like the Heat and Lakers, Yankees, Dodgers? What do you think about free agency, salary caps, and all of the reporting that goes along with them?
Well, I know you and I have discussed this quite a bit, and I am in favor in every sport to have a hard salary cap. I don't like baseball doesn't have one. I think it breaks the sport. Basketball has one, kind of, not really. And it results in having four or five teams that are good and everybody else is garbage, and that's going to be the standard going forward. The small market teams just aren't going to be able to compete.
I disagree with the NBA assessment. I don't think it. I don't think it is the way they have the cap structured is that if you go over, you start paying X amount of money, and if you're over that cap for a 3-year period, you're paying like 150% on every dollar that you're over. It's a dollar for dollar plus 50% more.
Yep.
For example,
the Heat could not or chose. The owner of the Heat says, "I'm not going to sacrifice my money, and I'm not going to pay $10 million in salary cap a penalty to keep Miller, which was the sharpshooter on the team." And they let him go only because the owner wasn't willing to take the hit on a salary cap implication, which caused LeBron James to say, "Wait a minute, I'm taking a $10 million reduction in salary to play here." Yep. And the owner won't accept a $10 million, who's making a lot more money on the Heat than I am, won't take a $10 million hit to his pocketbook in terms of a salary cap tax.
When he's making a portion of the billion-dollar industry that the NBA is as well.
Right.
So I don't think it – I like free agency. I like the way the NBA has set up their salary cap. Everybody can tell me over and over and over
again. So you like the NBA's, which you can go over it, so long as you're willing to pay a big tax?
As long as you're willing to pay more on it. And I mean, it's the same thing in they do something like that in baseball, too. But
well, baseball doesn't have a cap. It's just strictly tax.
But you still the Yankees were still giving the Twins money and stuff like that. All the Dodgers are still paying money to teams that are under a certain threshold of money. But I think the fact that baseball has no floor or no ceiling, that might be an issue. You can't go over the cap, sign people to go over the cap in the NBA.
Yeah, I think I like Aaron's point of view here that when you don't have a hard salary cap, what you end up having is a few big market teams that are dominant and nobody else can compete. It's one of the reasons that the NFL is so competitive, even with small market teams, is there's a really hard, inflexible salary cap. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having our discussion called Sports and the News, and we're talking about a situation where Aaron and Scott have a decidedly different view on the salary caps. Aaron's perspective is that they make it possible for a small market team to compete when you have a fixed salary cap. Scott would prefer them not to exist so that teams have more flexibility and probably somewhere in between. But I do have a question of just beyond salary caps here is what do you think about the NFL whereby the player is bound to any contract that he signs for the length of the contract, and yet the team is not bound to the contract. They can terminate it at any time.
I really don't like that at all. I think it should be handled the way that hockey handles it. You can buy out the player, so you're going to pay them less money over a longer period of time.
Personally, I love the NFL. I love the way they have it set up. You said that I don't. I like salary caps. I just think that there's certain things that you can. Look, the perfect example is the NFL. The NBA had to do it their way because they guarantee all their contracts, and they then tack it to where you start getting penalized if you're over, which is something that the owners are very, very much against. They don't want to be over the tax.
Yeah, but keep in mind, where does the tax go?
To
owners that aren't spending as much money on their players. So it's the thing about the NFL. I mean, the NBA that is and you brought up during the break, San Antonio. San Antonio is a team of players who all decided collectively that they would take less money and a lot less money to be able to play together. And so the players are making a financial sacrifice where the owners aren't making any. As a matter of fact, the owners are getting rich by not only the appreciation of their teams, but of the penalties that other owners are paying for the salary cap. Why? It seems like a grossly unfair scenario between the owners and the players in the NBA.
You're right, but I'm not going to feel – I refuse to feel sorry for somebody that gets to play a game
for money.
And make millions of dollars, more money than I'm ever going to make in my life.
I would agree. I think that salaries in sports as a whole are way out of whack, that there isn't any athlete that's worth $1 million a year, much less in baseball. There's athletes that are paid $30 to $32 million a year. You know, Clayton Kershaw next year, he is the best pitcher in baseball. The kid is a great kid. I mean, he's just a wonderful young man and an unbelievably talented athlete. But I have a problem paying a guy $1 million a start and having that be considered reasonable.
You know what I think they should do away with in sports?
What?
Guaranteed contracts. I think the NFL has it right. If you you can sign all this money, we'll guarantee you a certain percentage of your money.
Yep.
We're going to guarantee you a certain percentage of your money. But if at any point in time you don't perform up to a certain level, what job can you have to where if you don't perform your job up to a certain level, that your company can't say, you know
what? The Dodgers about 7 or 8 years ago signed an outfielder from the Atlanta Braves. And it was like a 5-year deal and big money. And the player came in about 15 pounds overweight and stopped working. He got his big contract. He decided he batted at least 75 points below the Mendoza line. I mean, he was batting like 125 for the Dodgers. And the Dodgers finally gave up on him. They couldn't send him to the minors.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't say, you know, you didn't honor your side of the contract. And they finally gave up on him and released him. He went and played for another team, and the Dodgers had to pay 100% of his salary. Now, there's something really wrong with that.
Well, that's just it. I think that if you want to fix sports, you can have a hard salary cap, but you've got to take away guaranteed contracts.
Yeah,
because the NFL, you can cut somebody, and a certain percentage of whatever guaranteed money you offer them still stays on your cap. But you're not stuck with that whole thing on your cap. Whereas if the NBA, let's say the Lakers decided, you know what, Kobe Bryant is not, you know, he's not coming back from this injury. He's not going to do us any good. We need the roster spot.
You don't think that paying Kobe $25 million for playing 6 games last year was a good deal?
No, but that's what I'm saying. But if the Lakers cut Kobe, his whole contract is still against their salary cap.
Yeah, there's all sorts of issues in sports contracts. We have Alex calling in from Tennessee that wants to talk sports as well. Hello, Alex. Welcome to Shattering Myths. Alex, tell what we'll do. We'll bring you in at right after the end of the commercial break, and look forward to hearing what you have to say. This is Shattering Myths. Apart from answering whatever point Alex makes in the next segment, we are going to transition to Johnny Football Manziel and so whether his private life should be private. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to go directly to Alex and hear what he has to say about sports and the news. And boy, we still want to hash it out more on player salaries and salary caps in a moment. Hello, Alex.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I just wanted to backtrack to the conversation about patriotism and sports and rivalry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a big University of Tennessee fan, and
I'm so sorry. I'm not an SEC fan, but that's the nature of sports. We can have different affections. Are you from the state of Tennessee, Alex?
I am.
All right. So I can see why you'd love the University of Tennessee. And by the way, you know, for a lot of years, Tennessee football was extraordinarily good.
Yeah. Thanks for Peyton Manning, by the way. He's been
Well, I just wanted to comment. Basically, when you're talking about rivalries and being a UT fan, we have, it seems like we have a rivalry with every other team in the SEC.
Right.
But when I talk about American politics, I use the analogy of the NFL with only two teams.
Mm-hmm.
And if there were only two teams, imagine what that rivalry would be like, and then you'd get the scam of the two-party paradigm.
Yeah, exactly.
For politics.
Yeah, actually, a lot of the ways that politics is played between the Republican and Democratic Party, it's kind of like sport, and it's actually covered like sport in our news. So, no, I would agree with you.
Yeah, so I use that analogy a lot, actually, when I'm talking about politics, and then somebody will say, well, what about an independent candidate?
Yeah.
I kind of shrugged that one off.
Yeah, my issue, by the way, with the SEC, so that you know, is that it got a combination of two things. One is just overall arrogance of the SEC as it relates to the 120-some-odd schools that are in Division I football. And the second is that when you look at NCAA rulings regarding the SEC versus schools not part of the SEC, they don't play by the same set of rules.
Sure.
So those are my two issues. Other than that, I recognize that there is something very special about SEC football in terms of the fans. You look at the whole expression of the day, the tailgating, the rivalry between schools, like, you know, Arkansas is not exactly a Mensa academy. And yet Arkansas's enthusiasm for their football team is kind of like Florida's, which is, again, not a Mensa academy. Tennessee is not known either for its great academic prowess. But the enthusiasm within the state for their football team amongst the SEC, like Alabama, I mean, it's just extraordinary. And people have a lot of fun with it. So to the extent that it's really a lot of fun, and celebrated is fun, then, you know, I'm also a fan of SEC football.
That's good. I just look back and look at the list of national championships and national champions and count how many SEC championships were.
Yeah, the current system, though, of course, is rigged. I mean, it really is rigged. It's really not. I don't think there's any team that can actually claim a national championship in football because there is no tournament to determine a national championship. And it's essentially voted on by the fans as who gets to play. And the SEC is automatically anointed one of the two spots and sometimes both of the spots. And my big issue there is that the SEC, by having so many teams in as part of the conference, but they don't play very many teams, and so most of the huge percentage of the SEC games are against lower division schools. And my view is that if I were in the NCAA, I'd say you disqualify yourself from even consideration if you're going to play down a conference. And that's not what we should be seeing. And so I think the current system is just hugely broken. And until they really have at least a 16 to 32 team tournament and allow them to play off during December and in January, I don't think there really is such thing as a national championship in college football.
That's true. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to a tournament.
Yeah, but they're only going to four teams. I mean, that's still a beauty contest.
It runs in cycles, though. I mean, SEC is dominant right now, but when I was a kid, it was the ACC. Miami dominated everybody. So just because the SEC is good right now, it's not something that's going to be.
But Miami wasn't part of the ACC when Miami was dominant. They were part of the Big East.
Well,
beyond that, and that's because there was nobody else in the Big East really, other than Virginia Tech.
But even
which
then,
is also now part of the ACC. But I think that the whole
had Florida State before that.
You had Florida State. You had Nebraska coming out of the Big 12. Texas was always big. Notre Dame was always huge, and they're an independent. College sports is always it's cyclical.
It hasn't been for a long time, though, in football, and it hasn't been for a long time in basketball. The Big East just imploded. You know, one of my problems with the conferences is that for the most part they're based upon football, and that they're football driven based upon the television revenues for football, and that they no longer make sense for the rest of the sports. So, you know, I'd love to see the NCAA and college football deal with football as if it were not part of the NCAA, wholly apart from the NCAA, and let college football be separate, and then let the schools have conference alignments that are close by, so that you're not, you know, flying the girls' broom hockey team 3,000 miles to play a game.
What do we think about student athletes being paid?
Well, in football, they ought to be. You know, and men's basketball, they ought to be. And the rest of sports, they shouldn't even receive scholarships, because the rest of sports, they're more money spent on those teams than those teams generate in revenue. So I'm all in favor of it in football and in men's basketball.
I think in a perfect world, those would be treated as more minor league systems than the NCAA system that's incorporated, but we may be too far in the hole to ever get out of it at this point, because they're pretty heavily intertangled.
Yeah, Aaron and I talk, Alex, during the breaks a lot about college basketball and college football serving as the farm teams, if you will, for the NFL and for the NBA. And those are the revenue generators. The NCAA tournament generates about 90% of the revenue for the NCAA, and college football generates about 95% of the revenue for universities and their sports programs. We'd love to see those programs separate from the NCAA. So the NCAA can have its antiquated rules, and for all other sports that have a very small audience, are net losers financially, and let them have their little rules for those, and let the two big money-making sports be somehow joined together with the NBA and the NFL. And so there would be a, under that basis, there would actually be a relationship between the Tennessee Titans and the University of Tennessee football.
Huh, that would be interesting.
Yeah. So let the guys that play it for profit have a role in that, and have an NFL tie-in with your best programs, and make it very much like a farm system, so that making money is considered good and pay the players.
There's one issue that comes to mind is players that only play one season in college and then get drafted.
Right.
How would that work if they'd be playing against the team they were just on the next
year? The deal with that definitely demonstrates that a very significant percentage of the kids for football, the best players in football and basketball, aren't there for an education. As a matter of fact, you know, the thing that was just revealed about North Carolina basketball was that most of the players don't even take classes that are part of the university's program. They're given classes that they don't even have to show up to. Mush their way through, pretending to be student athletes. So these kids are on those teams because they're debuting for the opportunity to play in the NBA or NFL, not for the education.
Sure.
And so I just think they ought to be dealt with separately. And if, you know, there could be two leagues in football and basketball. There could be the leagues that still want to maintain the student athlete idea and allow them to compete in that league, and let the big schools, the big programs, compete in a different league that is for profit, and take the rest of the NCAA sports and form conferences that are close by. Tennessee ought not have it to be traveled to. What was the last school added? I mean, it's so far away, and you just think, come on, this is...
Well, we played Oregon last season in Oregon.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, nobody, of course, went to that game.
No, of course not. No, of course not. You know, it's 400 degrees colder, by the way, that time of year in Oregon than it would be in Tennessee. I hear you. I think that the college football is badly broken because schools are afraid to play a tough schedule, and the SEC in particular plays games that ought to disqualify them from national consideration. Ought to be disqualified in terms of even, you know, the best defense or best passer or best quarterback. The records ought not even be accumulated when you're playing a division lower.
It's almost like they have a quota of games that they have to win that season, and in order to meet that quota, they have to play teams like UT Martin or
I think that a reason for them going down all that way is twofold. One is they only pay the visiting team $400,000, and they only play at home, so there's no home and away.
Sure.
The Alabama, if they go play Little Sisters of the Poor, they pay Little Sisters of the Poor $400,000 for the scrimmage, and they still sell out their stadium, and they get all of the proceeds from the game. And number two, it makes their players and their team look good in terms of an overwhelming victory and margin of victory and offensive and defensive performance. And, you know, I think it should disqualify them.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I would just love to see college football, though, continue. You have all of the weeks of December and January to can have a real playoff system. Those kids, no problem to, you know, to take their finals and do their studies. Have a real playoff system. Make it real as opposed to this stupid popularity contest that puts two or four teams together and pretends like that's the bowl championship series. It's a bunch of hogwash. We'll be back after the commercial break. Welcome back to Sports and the News. We're talking about NCAA football. Guys, during the break, we mentioned how just silly the alignments now are of conferences. Didn't the Big Ten, which is now I think 14 schools, so math is not one of the subjects taught in the Big Ten.
Well,
didn't the Big Ten recently bring in Rutgers?
Rutgers and Maryland.
Rutgers and Maryland. Yep.
Now my geography is not really clear here. Aren't Rutgers and Maryland on the East Coast?
Yes, they are. That was the whole idea.
Okay, so you're going off to the East Coast because you want more television revenue.
Well, Penn State's out east, too.
Well, sort of.
Yeah.
But Maryland's on the coast. Isn't Rutgers kind of they were the laughingstock of the Big East? I mean, they have one scandal after another of inappropriate, and you're going to bring Rutgers into your conference and think that you're adding credibility? I know I'm talking to Big Ten fans here, so I'm running a really fine line, but Rutgers?
Yeah, I don't...
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I know why they're doing it.
It's television revenue.
Yeah, it's going
right,
to generate
yeah.
way more money for them.
Right, right. So if you're back to this, why is that called a college sport and student athletes when all the decisions are made based upon television revenues?
Yeah, and they're not. It's not like.
Does Ohio State have a national rivalry with Rutgers?
No.
I don't know if anybody
no.
is.
But,
yeah, it's probably also true. Wasn't it Minnesota this year that paid North Carolina not to come?
Yes, yeah. They did.
But every conference has people that do that. That's not something that was new.
Yeah, that just happened to be the one that stuck
that'd
out
be the
to
one
me
that,
because it became a pretty big story
yeah.
last year.
Yeah,
if so,
on these parts.
That Minnesota's new football coach says we're not ready to play the caliber of team that North Carolina represents, so that we'll pay them to stay away.
Well, you know the powerhouse that North Carolina is when it comes to football.
You know, well, North Carolina occasionally has a B plus football team. I mean, they almost always have an A plus basketball team, but you know, North Carolina, the Tar Heels. And it's been a long time since the Tar Heels were at the top of the heap in terms of
ACC.
Football. Yeah. That tells you a lot about the caliber of Big Ten football these past few years.
They also just got off of a bunch of NCAA sanctions and things like that as well. So
the Golden Gophers were sanctioned?
No, North Carolina.
North Carolina was sanctioned. Yeah, not like SC was sanctioned, however.
If Minnesota gets caught with cheating, I'm going to be really upset because we're not even doing that right then.
Yeah, if you're cheating, you ought to at least put together a pretty good team.
If we're going to start paying players, let's start paying good ones.
Yeah, that's my big issue is that the Big Ten and the SEC are routinely have players say that they were paid, that the players will come public and say, this is how much I was paid, these are the players that were paid, here's the guys that paid us, here's when we were paid, how we were paid, and the like, and it's big money. And the NCAA says, I'm not going to look at that. Don't really care about that. Doesn't mean anything to us.
Yeah.
You know, the Miami case where the boosters were paying the players, but because Emmert was formerly the athletic director of Miami, sounds to me like he purposefully botched the NCAA investigation so that Miami wouldn't be accountable for what it had done.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Why wouldn't he? It's no different than President Obama telling Eric Holder to figure out who did this with some of the things that they've done.
So we're gonna fast and furious
in that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Politics and football. It's all who you have control of. You know, it's like the mafia and the made man. You know, you're beholden to me. So we don't want fairness here. What we want is we want an unlevel playing field to our advantage.
Yeah, and now we're back to salary caps.
So we need salary caps for college athletes too, right?
Yeah.
Well, it should be a minor league system, but it's where we keep ending up.
Yeah, I agree with you, Aaron. I think it really ought to be a minor league system. Let's admit it's for profit, and in any for profit enterprise, those who work within that enterprise ought to get paid. I think slavery was made illegal a long time ago. I happen to agree with you. Now, well, after the commercial break, we'll turn our attention to Paul.